Thanks for downloading Britain's Road to Socialism, a programme of the Communist Party. This edition was updated after party-wide consultation and agreed by our executive in January 2020.
Britain's Road to Socialism sets out the general outlook, analysis, strategy and main policies of the Communist Party in a single document. More than a wish list of slogans, this makes our party unique on the left in Britain. We've had such a revolutionary programme since 1935, updating, amending and even completely rewriting it as conditions have changed in England, Scotland, Wales, Europe and the wider world. The current edition of Britain's Road to Socialism was amended in 2020, following extensive discussions within and beyond the Communist Party, reflected in debates at successive party congresses. In particular, this updated edition takes more account of the relationship between capitalist exploitation and different types of oppression, the connection between capitalism and climate change, Britain's new position and prospects post-Brexit, the impact of casualisation and new technology on work and workers, the national question, regionalism and local government, and the most recent developments internationally, from the Middle East and China to Latin America and Africa, and their profound implications for all of us. Britain's Road to Socialism gives the Communist Party a unity, a clarity, a consistency, and a direction that has enabled the party to grow in members and influence over recent years. The more it's read, discussed, and utilised in the Labour and Progressive movements, the brighter the prospect for us to unite and take the road to socialism. Britain's Road to Socialism, introduction. In this programme, the Communist Party of Britain explains its view that capitalism must be overthrown in the interests of the working class and humanity. It identifies the forces and the strategy by which the power of the capitalist monopoly corporations and their state can be replaced by state power in the hands of the working class and its allies. The programme argues that socialism is the only alternative system of society that can meet the essential needs of humanity, providing the basis for ending all forms of exploitation and oppression. Once the threat of counter-revolution has been irrevocably defeated, nationally and internationally, the transition from the lower stage of communism to its higher stage can then be completed. This programme is based on the study, analysis and assessment of concrete realities, tendencies and trends. It's a guide to action, not a speculative prediction or a dogmatic blueprint. It's a living, developing programme to be constantly tested in practice and reassessed in the light of experience. Above all, it is subject to the Marxist insistence that the liberation of the working class and the emancipation of the people can only be achieved by the working class and the people themselves. Freedom cannot be imposed from outside or above. It must be fought for and won by the overwhelming majority of the population.
Summary. Capitalism is a system of exploitation that generates crisis, inequality, corruption, environmental degradation, and war. It is innately incapable of solving the most fundamental problems of humanity. The capitalist monopoly corporations and the state apparatus which serves their interests are the main obstacles to progress on every front, economic, environmental, political, social, cultural, and political. Socialism is the only form of society that offers the potential for solving humanity's problems in conditions of personal and collective freedom. Because the working class has the most direct and immediate interest in putting an end to capitalism and replacing it with a socialist society, its own class interests also represent the interests of society generally. In Britain, the potential exists to pursue an alternative economic and political strategy that challenges and ultimately defeats the ruling class. More specifically, a popular democratic anti-monopoly alliance can be built, led by the Labour movement, to fight for a left-wing programme, brackets LWP, of policies that would make inroads into the wealth and power of the monopoly capitalists. Any such strategy and programme must include far-reaching policies and action to reduce carbon emissions, which contribute to global warming and cause climate change with disastrous consequences for humanity. Through an upsurge in working class and popular action, a left government can be elected in Britain based on parliamentary majorities of Labour, Socialist, Communist and Progressive representatives, and strengthened by the election of left majorities in Scotland and Wales. To carry out the most advanced policies of an LWP, the mass movement and its left governments will have to engage in a decisive struggle for state power, brackets, the means by which one class enforces its rule over other classes and in society as a whole, close brackets. A united challenge to British state monopoly capitalism will require a high level of working class and progressive coordination and unity, maximising the democratic potential of national rights in Scotland and Wales and minimising the scope for division. Achieving state power and minimising the opportunities for counter-revolution will create the conditions in which to dismantle capitalism progressively and lay the foundations for a democratic, environmentally sustainable and peaceful future in a federal socialist Britain. A socialist society can then be built in which wealth and power are held in common and used in a planned way for the benefit of all, with the working class and its allies liberating the people from all forms of exploitation and oppression. Putting an end to British imperialism, the exercise of monopoly capitalist exploitation and power in other parts of the world, is the biggest contribution we can make to international liberation and socialism. A communist party that exercises mass influence will be essential if Britain is to take the road to socialism in practice through political class struggle.
Chapter 1, Capitalism and Exploitation. In the first half of the 21st century, after more than 200 years of capitalist domination, humanity faces a series of interrelated crises that imperil the very existence of our species on this planet. 2 billion of the Earth's almost 8 billion population lack adequate nutrition, sanitation, healthcare, and education. The world faces a catastrophic energy crisis as finite resources are run down without the development of safe, sustainable alternatives. At the same time, burning fossil fuels is warming the planet and changing climate patterns with potentially disastrous consequences for us all. Wars continue to devastate human lives on a massive scale, while the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction threatens even greater horrors to come. Communists hold capitalism responsible for these crises, for taking the planet and its people towards the edge of the abyss. The development of capitalism and imperialism. The term capitalism denotes a type of society in which a very few people own the means of production, industrial, commercial, plant and machinery, land, energy, raw materials, etc., as capital, while the great majority have to sell their ability to work, their labour power, to survive. Capitalists own most of these means of production. Others may be owned by the state or workers' cooperatives. They pay workers a wage in return for their labour power. But unlike the means of production used up in the production process, the costs of which are passed on to the consumer at little or no profit, workers can create more value than that of the wage they need to buy life's essentials. The capitalist reaps this surplus value when the product which embody this labour are sold as commodities. Surplus value is, ultimately, the source of capitalist profit which funds share dividends, loan interest, commercial rent, corporate taxes, expanded investment, and the inflated incomes of company executives. Extracting surplus value is then the essence of capitalist exploitation. In order to maximise it, the capitalists seek to drive wages down towards the basic subsistence level. As a type of society, capitalism is relatively recent. Its emergence from feudalism was only made possible in Britain by driving much of the rural population from the land through forcible clearances and enclosures of the commons. They could then constitute a new labour force in the workshops, mills, mines and factories, which then attracted more workers from the countryside with the promise of regular work and higher wages. Women abandoned paid home working to constitute a significant section of the new industrial workforce alongside young men and boys. The super exploitation of child and female labour helped accumulate the capital to finance the expansion of overseas settlement and trade. The super exploitation of slave labour in the colonies provided raw materials, super profits, and fresh capital to accelerate Britain's industrialisation in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. Crucial to these developments was a continuation of women's unpaid labour in the home, cleaning, cooking, caring and rearing the next generation of workers to help create and replenish labour power's capacity to produce surplus value. The oppression of women maintains this domestic role and became even more important for monopoly capital when workers organised to fight for higher wages. Capitalist exploitation has always depended on maintaining a labour market in which workers compete for work on preventing collective organisation by dividing working people against each other through prejudice and discrimination, based, for example, on sex and gender, nationality, race and ethnicity, age, religion and occupational grade. Capitalism's drive to maximise profit revolutionised industry, commerce, science, technology, culture, politics and society in general. In the most advanced capitalist countries, a small number of large combines, trusts and syndicates grew to monopolise each major branch of the economy. The drive to above average monopoly profits stimulated the fusion of industrial capital and banking capital to produce a new financial oligarchy. As monopolisation and the over-accumulation of capital began to depress profitability, the finance capitalist increasingly turned to potential sources of super-profits abroad. Thus, capitalism expanded into its imperialist stage in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. As competition intensified between rival monopolies backed by their respective states, so the scene was set for the inter-imperialist Great War of 1914 to 18. The chief characteristics of imperialism, therefore, are monopolisation, colonial, or, in countries of one formal political independence, neo-colonial, super-exploitation, inter-imperialist rivalry and war. In the Russian Empire, the corruption and incompetence of a landlord police state helped forge an alliance between the peasants' struggle against landlordism and the workers' struggle against capitalism. Mass protest overthrew Tsarist rule in the February Revolution of 1917, before Lenin and the Bolsheviks went on to lead the revolt against pro-war politicians, bureaucrats, and military generals in the Great October Socialist Revolution later that year. This destroyed the Russian imperialist state and enabled the country's workers and peasants to create a new system of state power, which opened the road to socialism. In the leading capitalist countries, the demands of total war in 1914-18 greatly enhanced and expanded their productive forces, the means of production, labour and technology, and the economic relations between society's classes. The state intervened to take command of the war economy, promoting monopoly and methods of mass production, which sharply raised the productivity of labour. The war thus accelerated the fusion between the economic power of the monopolies and the political power of the state, the government and civil service, parliament, the police and intelligence services, the armed forces, the courts and prison system, local government, etc. The result was a system known as state monopoly capitalism. The capitalist state became progressively subordinated to the interests of one section of the capitalist class, monopoly-based finance capital, while the system's growing contradictions led to increasing state intervention. At the same time, the war had created a mobilised working class across Europe, which blocked attempts to cut wages to pre-war levels. The decade after the First World War saw further monopolisation across the advanced capitalist countries and a speculative boom in capital values. The Wall Street financial crash in 1929 triggered capitalism's biggest slump so far. Only massive state intervention in the economy, including preparations for war, began to rebuild industry and improve social conditions in Britain, the US, and elsewhere. In Germany, as previously in Italy and Portugal, the ruling class turned to fascism, open terroristic dictatorship in the service of monopoly capital, to destroy the communist challenge and divide the working class movement. This was also done to prepare for a new imperialist war to redivide the world in favour of German monopoly capital. Initially, Nazi Germany was able to use the anti-Sovietism of the ruling classes of other imperialist countries to strengthen its own economic and military position. In Britain, France, Spain, the US, China, and elsewhere, communists led the fight during the 1930s to build a working class united front as a basis for a wider people's front against fascism. The Soviet government and the international communist and working class movement were able to use the divisions within imperialism, chiefly between bourgeois democracy and fascism, to prevent a united front of the main imperialist powers against the Soviet Union. This made possible the defeat of fascism in a war to liberate the peoples of Europe. The Second World War, 1939-45, also marked the emergence of the United States as the world's leading imperialist power. It had already established its own colonies and semi-colonies in Asia and Central and South America. The ability of the enlarged socialist bloc to ensure full employment and basic social provisions strengthened people's determination in the capitalist world not to return to pre-war conditions. State monopoly capitalism had to establish or extend welfare and education systems. In Britain, essential industries and services were nationalised to ensure investment, economic growth, and full employment. The drive began in Western Europe to build an economic, political, and military bloc through the European Coal and Steel Community, the European Political Community, the European Defence Community, and the European Atomic Energy Agency that would obstruct socialism at home and confront the Soviet Union and the emerging socialist states in Central and Eastern Europe. The basis was laid for the rapid reconstruction and development of state monopoly capitalism in West Germany and Japan. Thus, imperialism entered its second phase in the late 1940s, characterised nationally and internationally by the stabilisation and restructuring of capitalism. Capitalist state power was used to regulate economic demand, promote profitability, and coordinate international trading and currency relations. Arising from the necessities of war and then post-war reconstruction, and stimulated by the Cold War, capitalism's productive forces grew at an unprecedented rate in the 1950s and 1960s. This was due in no small part to the Scientific and Technological Revolution, STR, with its large-scale application of computer and microelectronic technology. The research, education, and long-term investment needed to underpin the STR could only be organised to the necessary extent through the state. The transnational corporations, TNCs, became the decisive monopolies of imperialism. In the pursuit of maximum profit, their decisions, which sectors and markets to expand or contract, and which productive forces to develop or scrap, decided the fate not only of workforces, but of whole communities, regions, and nations. Inter-imperialist rivalry was moderated by the common drive to wage the Cold War against the Soviet Union and its allies, hence the founding of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, in 1949, and hot war in Korea and Vietnam. National liberation movements inspired by the October Socialist Revolution and the victory over fascism led most colonies to formal independence during the post-war era. But the main imperialist powers retained a large measure of economic control through the operations of their TNCs and through such international bodies as the International Monetary Fund, IMF, the World Bank, and the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, GATT. Wherever possible, pro-imperialist regimes were installed in the semi- and ex-colonies, and brutal force was used to crush progressive, left-wing and anti-imperialist movements. The US even threatened nuclear war against Cuba's sovereignty and independence. Imperialist intervention and the operations of TNCs aggravated the uneven economic and political development of capitalism on a global scale. While capitalism grew rapidly in the newly industrialised countries of the Far East, large parts of Africa and South America fell further behind in economic and social development. Western imperialism ruthlessly plundered their natural resources, exploited their labour, and plunged them into debt bondage. In the leading capitalist economies, the prolonged period of post-war expansion, made possible by state intervention, the STR, the rebuilding of Germany and Japan, and rising productivity, was based on a ruling class strategy of promoting class collaboration. Workers would enjoy job security, social benefits, employment rights, and ever higher living standards, while their trade union and political representatives would seek only to reform capitalism, not to challenge or abolish it. But cyclical and structural crises reasserted themselves more markedly from the late 1960s. In 1973, the international oil crisis, triggered by Middle East states looking to strengthen their economic, political and military position at the expense of Western imperialism and Israel, exacerbated one such cyclical downturn. At the same time, it signalled the onset of today's gathering energy crisis. Finance capital faced rising prices, working class pressure to maintain living standards, military and political reverses in the Third World, the underdeveloped and developing countries, and the continuing political and technological challenge from the socialist countries. Moreover, the international monetary system disintegrated in the 1970s as the main imperialist powers sought competitive advantage through currency devaluation. Speculators contributed to the instability. In these conditions, the ideologists, economists, and politicians of the new right gained ascendancy in US and British ruling class circles, Their aim was to restore and increase monopoly capital's profits through a wide-ranging onslaught against wages, trade unionism, public and welfare services, progressive taxation, public ownership of industry and the utilities, and against banking and financial regulation. Thus, imperialism began the transition to a third phase of development from the early 1980s. Imperialist aggression, counter-revolution, and the dismantling of socialism in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union from the late 1980s opened up enormous opportunities for monopoly capital to seize control of resources, transportation routes, utilities, and markets in the former socialist countries and the Third World. The result has been a prolonged and continuing worldwide imperialist offensive to maximise monopoly profit through neoliberal policies of privatisation, deregulation, intensified exploitation of labour, and the free movement of Western monopoly capital. This imperialist globalisation is presented by its supporters and apologists as an inevitable economic process. However, from the outset, it has been driven politically by the representatives of state monopoly capitalism. New and existing international agencies and mechanisms such as the World Trade Organization, WTO, GATT, the IMF, the World Bank, and bilateral so-called free trade and investment agreements are utilised to enforce neoliberal policies. The European Union, EU, has played a leading role in this process, confirming its character as an alliance led by the most powerful state monopoly capitalist powers. It strives to overcome internal contradictions and transform itself into an imperialist United States of Europe, complete with its own foreign and military policies aligned with NATO. The champions of capitalist globalisation confront workers with two options: either yield to its logic of low wages, intensified labour, and permanent job insecurity, and hope to stay and work, or defy it with allegedly dire consequences personally and for the nation's economy. Third World and former socialist countries whose regimes may obstruct imperialist power are demonised as rogue or failed states, often on the basis of racist presumptions. They are accused of frustrating the will of the international community, which usually means the US and its allies. Consequently, bombing missions or full-scale military invasions have been launched against Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, Libya, Syria, and Somalia. The September 2001 attacks by Al-Qaeda on the US were used as a pretext to launch a bogus war on terror. US, British, and NATO forces extended and deepened imperialism's military, political, and economic influence across the greater Middle East region, from North Africa to Pakistan, inflicting their state terrorism on the peoples of Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria on a monstrous scale. Some of the world's biggest reserves of oil, gas, and minerals, along with vital supply routes, are located in this area, which is strategically located between China, India, Russia, and the African continent. Far from the end of the Soviet Union and Cold War producing a more peaceful world, the imperialist powers led by the US and Britain have since engaged in a massive escalation of armaments programmes, a non-stop series of military interventions, and NATO's expansion eastwards, in tandem with the EU, towards the borders of Russia. China is almost completely surrounded by imperialist military bases. Its handful of military facilities in other countries contrasts sharply with the many hundreds of US bases around the world.
A system of contradictions and crises. The whole history and experience of capitalism proves that it's a system of crises and contradictions. The most fundamental, insoluble contradiction of capitalism is that between the social character of production, how society's goods and services are produced and distributed in a vast network across society, and the private character of economic ownership and control. The economy's productive forces are organized together in a complex, interdependent system on which society is based. Yet, under capitalism, these forces are mostly owned and controlled by a small minority of the population, the main capitalist shareholders, who direct them to serve their own narrow individual and class interests, not the needs of society generally. In their drive to maximise market share and profit, capitalist employers fight to raise productivity and hold down wages. The same effort also takes place in the public sector, where the state seeks to hold down wages, pensions and other costs in order to minimise taxation and wages pressure in the private sector. Here is the primary economic basis for the class struggle between the monopoly capitalists and their state striving to maximise profit on the one side, and the whole working class striving to maximise wages and improve living standards on the other. Yet, working class purchasing power needs to be maintained if capitalism's commodities are all to be sold at a profit. This becomes increasingly difficult when economic growth turns into boom, as capitalists fight to expand sales, production, and profits. Increasing wages might ease the situation, but this eats into profits and only spurs the capitalists to boost production still further. Expanding private credit or public expenditure might maintain demand in the economy for a limited time, but it has to be paid for as production continues to grow. So, the point arrives when the working class cannot afford to buy all of capitalism's commodities at prices which sustain profitability. Capitalist growth invariably ends in a crisis of overproduction. Commodities can no longer be sold at a profit, and companies begin to cut back on production and investment, causing a slowdown or recession. Workers are laid off, further depressing demand in the economy. Production falls, sometimes in a sudden crash, and stagnates or declines further in depression. Society's productive forces are destroyed as premises are closed, plant and machinery scrapped, and large numbers of workers are forced into unemployment. In the wake of such crises, the trend to monopoly is reinforced as stronger companies take over weaker ones and increase their own market share. This lays the basis for the cycle to begin again. It does so because of another contradiction intrinsic to capitalism between the drive for technological advance and the source of capitalist profit. As companies innovate and mechanise to compete more effectively against each other, so the source of fresh surplus value in the economy as a whole, living labour power, occupies a smaller share of the production process. This depresses the general rate of profit. In order to counteract this tendency, capitalism searches perpetually for cheaper labour and materials, higher levels of productivity, new profit-making activities and fresh markets for its products. This search and its underlying contradiction will only intensify as robotics, automation and artificial intelligence, AI, systems develop. Instead of applying them in a planned way to enhance workers' control over the labour process and to increase their affordable leisure time, capitalism will try to impose this new technology in conditions of subjection, dislocation and crisis. These pressures reinforce the tendency of the most ruthless big capitalist to subject oppressed sections of society, women, black workers and immigrant labour, to super exploitation at work, using them to undermine workers' terms and conditions and trade union strength. In the face of monopoly power, small business owners feel compelled to reproduce these patterns of oppression and super exploitation. The general crisis of capitalism. The inherent contradictions of capitalism have intensified and broadened. Their consequences have become more serious during the imperialist era. They embrace not only the economic, but also the social, cultural, and political spheres of capitalist society. For much of the 20th century, communists referred to the all-round general crisis of capitalism. Its chief features were identified as The sharpening of capitalism's contradictions, the growth of monopoly, the dislocation in the distribution of the capitalist surplus, conflicts within the capitalist class, economic stagnation and instability, increasing state intervention in the economy, and deepening class conflict. The degeneration of capitalist politics, ideology, morality and culture, with their demagogy, careerism, corruption, egoism and callousness. The crisis and overthrow of imperialism's colonial system. The emerging challenge from the forces of socialism led by the Soviet Union and the international socialist system. The concept of general crisis underestimated the capacity of state monopoly capitalism to overcome crises, to withstand the socialist challenge, maintain exploitation abroad through neocolonialism, launch and sustain the STR, and retain political, ideological, and cultural dominance. It also overestimated from the late 1950s the achievements of the socialist countries and their potential for further rapid economic development. Counter-revolution in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe temporarily reinvigorated capitalism ideologically, politically, and to a lesser extent, economically. This masked capitalism's general crisis for a short time, yet its essential features persisted. Indeed, they have returned to full view with a vengeance. On the economic front, for instance, recent regional and global crises have assumed a substantially and even predominantly financial character. This reflects the increasingly parasitic nature of monopoly finance capital, which increasingly seeks to make money from non-productive and socially useless or harmful activities. The deregulation and liberalisation of financial markets from the 1980s led to a huge boom in trading as finance capital engaged in an orgy of fictitious accumulation, speculating in financial instruments unrelated to the creation of useful goods and services. In a process known as financialization, all kinds of contracts were turned into very complex, interest-bearing financial products to be traded in the City of London and on Wall Street. This huge bubble in capital values based on unsustainable and often fraudulent financial securities linked to debt and risk burst in late 2007. The high levels of private, household and government debt that had maintained demand in the productive economy lost their profitability, making a postponed cyclical downturn all the more sudden and sharp. From 2008, mass unemployment returned to the record post-war levels of the early 1980s as living standards plummeted and public and social services were cut to the bone. Across the developed capitalist world, governments and central banks then had to rescue the financial monopolies and their markets with the biggest bailouts in history, using public money and public institutions to do so. In effect, they nationalised the debts and liabilities, forced the working class to pay for them through austerity policies, and then restored the banks to the private sector once they have returned to profitability. Since then, the capitalist monopolies have reaped most of the benefits of recovery and expansion, while workers increasingly face precarious employment, worsening conditions, wage and pension cuts, housing problems, and loss of services. Crisis in the imperialist countries drags down peoples in the Third World too. In the Arab Spring of 2011, there were widespread popular uprisings against oppressive and authoritarian regimes. People rose up against the extra poverty imposed on them by the post-2007 crisis in the developed capitalist countries. But their revolts were stifled or crushed. A history of repression at the hands of reactionary and dictatorial regimes across North Africa and the Middle East meant that local left and progressive forces could not sustain strategic organisation very long after the uprisings. Pro-imperialist and sectarian forces gained control, determined to suppress the growing demand for democratic rights and social justice. Western diplomatic and military intervention helped plunge a number of these countries into devastating civil conflict and ruinous wars. Clearly, the world's major capitalist powers and their agencies, such as the IMF and the EU, are unable or unwilling to control the immense, anarchic, parasitical, anti-social financial forces unleashed by capitalist globalization. Ever since the post-war international trade and monetary system collapsed in the 1970s, all attempts to construct a new financial and economic settlement have failed. Policies to tighten state regulation of the financial markets and institutions have been feeble, with governments remaining enthralled to the power of the financial monopolies. Thus, on a global scale, the insoluble contradictions of capitalist production, where corporate ownership holds back social development, have combined with and been aggravated by the contradictions of financialized capitalism, where non-productive sectors hold back socially useful production. Together, they constitute the permanent structural crisis in the economic base of capitalist society. The combined economic and financial crisis that broke out in 2007 also confirmed the recent tendency to synchronization between the main capitalist economies. Much of the time, they grow and contract together to a greater or lesser degree. Capitalist globalization has made it more difficult for one major economy to grow out of crisis at the expense of others through state intervention, devaluation, or trade. Monopoly finance capital uses state power to enforce its interests against imperialist rivals and against third world peoples through super exploitation, trade inequality, war, and forced mass migration. This reality illustrates another fundamental contradiction of capitalism, that between imperialism's incessant drive for domination at home and abroad, and humanity's aspirations for peace, national self-determination, and a civilized society. While imperialism has used the crisis as an opportunity for super exploitation of the third world, China has become a major engine of world growth, not least in the developing countries. The disparities in economic and social development between nations and whole regions of the world have tended to increase over the past 30 years, interrupted only by the impact of the 2007 and 2008 crash, which set back the most advanced economies, and also China's need for raw materials, which has boosted third world production. This tendency is the product of capitalist economic anarchy, where no comprehensive economic planning takes place above the level of the individual enterprise or conglomerate, combined with the unequal distribution of monopoly and state power between the imperialist countries and the rest. Capitalism's structural economic crisis has also produced a structural crisis of distribution on a world scale. 1 billion of the Earth's almost 8 billion people are undernourished, although enough food is produced to feed 12 billion. TNCs organise food production and distribution in order to maximise profits in the most lucrative markets, while third world governments, enslaved by debt, collaborate in cash crop farming, which leaves their own populations poor and hungry. Meanwhile, the common agricultural policy supports high prices and profits in the EU by subsidising landowners, paying them to restrict production, destroying part of their produce, while also dumping some of it on third world markets to the ruin of their local producers. Nearly 500 million people have no access to basic medical services, and every year, more than 13 million children die from preventable or curable illnesses. 750 million people lack safe drinking water, and more than 2 billion have no access to improved sanitation. Medicines, water and other energy resources that could be harnessed for those in direst need are instead exploited, diverted, or neglected by capitalist monopolies seeking maximum profit. 750 million adults are illiterate, more than 1 in 8 of the world's adult population, almost two-thirds of them women. Another dimension of capitalism's general crisis has come to the fore in recent decades, one which threatens the very future of humanity. Capitalism's rapacious short-term drive to maximise monopoly profit now endangers our global environment and ecosystem. Enormous damage is being done by the large-scale extraction of non-fuel mineral resources and the disposal of plastic and other harmful and unnecessary packaging. Intensive agriculture is degrading soils, which could be enriched by the return of metabolic waste, while fracking is creating dangerous geological instability. The continuing growth in carbon emissions plays the main part in heating up the Earth, melting the polar ice caps, raising sea levels, polluting the oceans, increasing desertification, producing more extreme weather systems, and destabilizing some of the most vulnerable societies on our planet. Yet big business and the major capitalist powers refuse to take the drastic steps necessary to curb emissions, for fear of curtailing monopoly profits. Instead, they use sanctions, military force, and compliant local dictatorships to control oil and gas supplies. Hence the disastrous record of US, British, and European subversion and intervention in the Middle East and oil-rich countries such as Venezuela, Brazil, Libya, and Nigeria. As millions of people flee the famines and resource wars inflicted on their homelands by imperialist super-exploitation, military aggression, and global warming, they constitute some of the biggest forced migrations in history. The depletion of finite resources such as coal, oil, and natural gas, without the planned development of renewable alternatives, confronts humanity with the prospect of catastrophic energy shortages within a generation. Yet instead of investing massively in alternative, safe, and renewable energy generation and distribution, as some individual member states do, the EU collectively promotes carbon emission trading schemes. These enable the industrial and financial monopolies to trade licenses to pollute for profit, while shifting dirtier production to the developing countries when not limiting their industrialization altogether. Meanwhile, capitalism's social crisis afflicts countries at every level of development. Almost everywhere, social inequality has widened over recent decades. The alienation of people from their local community and society, especially young people denied prospects and opportunities, has grown, together with the associated problems of drug abuse, crime, and antisocial behavior. In the sphere of politics, big business influence has nurtured naked careerism, hypocrisy, and corruption. Large numbers of people in the advanced capitalist democracies, especially among the working class, have turned away from bourgeois parties. This is reflected in declining levels of participation in political parties, together with higher levels of skepticism and hostility towards professional politicians. Popular disillusionment and anger can also find expression in support for the political forces of the far right and fascism. These proposed false and nationalistic, xenophobic or racist remedies for people's real or perceived problems. Nonetheless, people across the globe continue to mobilise in favour of progressive responses to austerity, privatisation, unemployment, racism, pollution, global warming, militarism and imperialist war. Ideologically, while many people's confidence in any viable alternative to capitalism was shaken across the world by the destruction of the Soviet Union, anti-capitalist attitudes remain widespread and have increased in Britain, the US and Western Europe in the wake of the post-2007 crisis. Capitalist ownership and control continually undermine the social, unifying and liberating potential of the arts and other cultural activities for working class people, both as producers and consumers. Capitalism increasingly produces culture as it does for other commodities, for sale at a profit and for ideological reasons, regardless of social need or the social good. Popular culture can thereby be turned into a commercial, conservative force that promotes ideas of selfishness, greed, and individualism. Monopoly capitalist society is one in which the price of everything is proclaimed, while the real value of things to society as a whole is denied or distorted. There is little in capitalist mass-produced culture that reflects the real experience, collectiveness, and creativity of working-class life, past or present. This underlines the value of working-class people striving for cultural activities which are affordable, accessible, and help bring out our common humanity. New technology such as the internet and other social media has tremendous potential for education, social inclusion, organization, and mobilization. But again, capitalist or state ownership and control decide much of its structure, content, accessibility, and application. Thus, it is used to intensify exploitation at work, manipulate consumer and political choices, enhance military capability and to divert, trivialise and create dependencies at the cost of people's physical and mental health. Economically, socially, politically and culturally, capitalism has long ceased to play a progressive role in human development. Capitalism is dynamic in its drive to maximise profit, but this vital feature of capitalism threatens every aspect of humanity. Capitalism's general crisis is society's general crisis, as much in the nations of Britain as anywhere else.
Thanks for listening to our programme, Britain's Road to Socialism. We hope that it's given you inspiration, new ideas, and a determination to fight for a better Britain. For more information, contact our website at www.communistparty.org.uk.